Engaging, thorough, cutting edge with essential information, unbiased and unfiltered. When it comes to the issues in your community, WZND is here with detailed investigative pieces from the award-winning WZND news team. WZND's Bird's Eye View gives you in-depth information on the issues you need to know about. Recognized for excellence in long-form news by the Illinois Broadcasters Association, College Broadcasters Incorporated, and the Society of Professional Journalists, The Bird's Eye View starts now, only on 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.
Hello and welcome to the February edition of Bird's Eye View. We decided to take a look into some of the inner workings and processes of the American justice system. We'll be talking about sentencing, rehabilitation, and so much more throughout the show. I'm the producer of today's show, Gavin Broderick.
I'm co-host Maritza Navarro-Lopez.
And I'm your other co-host, Cameron Kelly.
How are you guys doing today?
Amazing. I'm actually really excited to get into this show and excited to dive into something I feel like a lot of people aren't educated about.
And I'm also wonderful. I'm just happy to be here this morning with you both, and I'm looking forward to seeing what this show brings forth.
We have a completely packed show for you that I'm just so excited to share with each and every one of you. We're going to start with social justice advocates for changes in the American justice system, and then we'll take a look into the processes of delivering a criminal sentencing. After that, we're going to take a look at how the media understands the justice system and how social media may impact the cases themselves. And to finish, we have a history of the system and incarcerations. We have such an exciting show to share with each and every one of you, so be sure to stay listening to 103.3 WZND.
The Bird's Eye View on 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Bird's Eye View. If you're just now tuning in, this month's show is all about the American justice system. We really wanted to focus on the inner workings and processes of the system.
Social justice is a large topic, so I got to weigh in on what leaders of the community had to say about what they did to tangibly help those in need. My piece was interesting because I was able to talk to the American Civil Liberties Union chapter and the NAACP about what they do specifically for the community and how they are listening ears. Social justice today is displayed in many ways, through social media, marches, and protests. But what do justice groups do specifically to help their communities? Chairperson of American Civil Liberties Union, Bloomington Normal Chapter, Carol Coos, explains how the organization helped to protect the rights of individuals after McLean County State's Attorney and County Clerk had an ordinance that would not allow people to congregate.
It would have been necessary for any group who wanted to gather for any purpose, whether it was for a wedding or a rally, a demonstration, religious ceremony, whatever, you would have to contact the county clerk and register with them, and then the county clerk would tell you exactly when you would be scheduled to meet, but you could only meet on the grounds of the old county courthouse.
Coos explains how the ordinance could infringe on the amendments.
Now, this is not only extremely impractical, but it's definitely limiting everyone's right to freedom of speech and freedom to congregate.
Coos goes on to say that ACLU serves as a guidance for residents in the community, and the organization reaches out to others for help.
We work in conjunction with the state getting legal advice from them because the chapters do not have authorization to actually do any form of litigation or legal advising.
The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People is a civil rights organization that has been around since the early 1900s. The NAACP branch president in Bloomington Normal, Linda Foster, says that she never loses hope in the fight for justice, but she often reflects on the country's journey.
It thrills me to have conversations with individuals about where we haven't been, where we've been, and where we're going, and where we're at. We're nowhere near where we should be at. But at the same time, we want to make sure we don't go back to where we were. And so we need everybody. We need everybody on board with this so that we can have a community and a world where individuals will have the same distribution of wealth and opportunities and privileges.
The branch has followed the Dante Wright case very closely. First Vice President Carla Campbell Jackson mentions that there was a moment of celebration for the verdict of Kim Potter, but her feelings changed immediately.
And of course, we look at it as a very inappropriate slap on the wrist. So for someone to take a life and only receive 2 years as a sentence, but knowing that 16 months is probably all the person will have to serve.
Even though hopes are high for fighting social justice, Campbell Jackson mentions that there are issues that need to be addressed right here in Bloomington Normal.
On almost a daily basis, we're receiving complaints from every company in the town of Bloomington Normal. So we cannot deny that there are systemic racism issues right here in our own backyard.
Foster says that she hopes social justice continues to promote fairness, equality, and allows individuals opportunities. For WZND and Bird's Eye View, I'm Cameron Kelly.
What I always find fascinating is the NAACP itself. I love hearing about how people just like you and me advocate for change in their communities. They work so hard for the good of the people. It's just so democratic, and I just love it. It really inspires me to do more for the people around me.
And social justice advocates often refer to seeking justice, but justice in the system does not look the same for everyone. But we're going to talk about that a little bit later on and why this is.
When interviewing, First Vice President Carla Campbell Jackson kind of went into detail with me about how social justice goes much deeper than those marches and protests, but it is important to have a connection with people and hear them out. She also mentioned to me that we have to be more aware of what's going on in our community while simultaneously looking at the world of justice as a whole.
And when thinking to the American justice system, we all immediately think to jails and incarcerations. But before someone is incarcerated, they have to be sentenced for their crime. And sentencing is not a one-size-fits-all, as I said earlier. I spoke with McLean County State's Attorney Don Knapp and McLean County Judge Jason Chambers to expand on this topic. In the American justice system, sentencing relies on varying factors specific to the crime and defendant. When someone commits an offense under the laws of the state of Illinois, the legislature determines whether or not they are misdemeanor or felony offenses. Then, within either misdemeanor or felonies, there are classifications. McLean County State's Attorney Don Knapp expands on these factors and how they correlate with an individual's sentencing.
So, for example, a Class 4 felony is, depending on the specific felony, could be probationable or could serve a sentence between 1 to 3 years incarceration. And then within that range, anywhere from probation to up to 3 years, then you get to those factors in mitigation and factors in aggravation.
Within these classifications, there's a range of time that somebody could be sentenced to. At a sentencing hearing in Illinois, a judge will hear evidence from both the state and defendant regarding what is called aggravation or mitigation. However, despite all these factors, McLean County Judge Jason Chambers says there's a lot of misconceptions about the range of time under the classifications of the type of crime.
A lot of people don't know that there are those ranges. We have to stick within those. So if it's an offense where probation is not an option, then it must be an offense. It must be a sentence that's not probation. Or the other way, where somebody might think, oh, that person should have gotten way more. Well, it's looking at the sentencing ranges, and we are constrained to those.
Criminal law theorists believe that sentences serve two purposes. First, they serve the goal of deterring future crime by both the convict and by other individuals contemplating a committal of the same crime. Second, a sentence serves as a goal of retribution, which posits that the criminal deserves punishment for having acted criminally. For Bird's Eye View and WZND, I'm Maritza Navarro-Lopez. While I was working on this piece, McLean County State's Attorney Don Knapp actually sent me a few statutes to gain a better idea about sentencing and the factors that do affect it. And it was honestly quite interesting to read the different factors of mitigation and aggravation, factors that I honestly would have never considered. With little to no knowledge of the justice system, I figured that they were set years people received, but never understood what warranted a lengthier sentence than another.
I completely agree. I went into this month knowing almost nothing, not only about sentencing, but the criminal justice system as a whole. Almost all my previous knowledge had come from movies and TV, so I've really been learning a lot.
Me too, Gavin. I feel as if there have been so many cases that are identical, but I've seen two completely different outcomes. It was eye-opening hearing about the classifications of sentencing.
The interesting and relevant topics do not stop there. We have a lot more to learn and discuss after this break. You're listening to The Bird's Eye View on 103.3 WZND.
More Bird's Eye View is here now, only on 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.
Welcome back to The Bird's Eye View. If you're now just tuning in, this show is about American justice system. So far, we have discussed social justice as well as sentencing in the justice criminal system.
In the statutes I was referring to earlier in my piece, I had difficulty reading into all the factors that relate to sentencing, and that lack of knowledge we discuss is truly widespread. Thus, we rely heavily on media outlets to relay information about these things when it comes to high-profile cases. Cases like Derek Chauvin, Kim Potter, and even common misdemeanor ones.
Yes, and in this next piece, Blake Bogart from the news team dives into the issue and the other misconceptions that can occur from the public.
The rise of news media and the internet has made it easier than ever for members of the public to gain access to the outcomes of high-profile judiciary cases. But with the significant rise in access to media, how might it negatively impact our perceptions of these high-profile cases? For those in charge of overseeing the adjudication of a case, they're tasked with weighing all of the facts presented to them. These facts differ from case to case, which is why no two verdicts will ever be exactly identical. State's attorney Don Knapp spoke on the reason for this fluctuation in outcomes.
I think some of that gets lost in the general public because they say, well, this person did a retail theft and that person did a retail theft and they stole the same amount of merchandise and one got a longer sentence than the other. And they're just unaware of those aggravating and mitigating factors. They're statutory factors that judges look at. So two people can commit the exact same offense, but no two people are exactly the same. No two people have, that I've come across, have the exact criminal history. One, it could have been their first offense. One, it could have been their 100th offense.
When there are missing facts from news coverage of a sentencing, it can cause confusion to arise within the public about why sentencing may seem harsher or more lenient than what is being presented with news coverage. Knapp urges the general public to go with their gut when it comes to initially hearing the ruling of a case.
So what gets blown up on social media is a couple facts, but never all of the facts. And when judges sentence somebody, they have all of the facts that rarely get reported in the media. So I would just caution the general public, when they hear something that doesn't sound right, it's probably not right because they probably don't have all the facts. And unless they were in court at the time the sentence was being handed out and through the entire trial, there are probably some facts that they're missing.
In an increasingly digital world, having information at the touch of our fingers can be a double-edged sword. While we have an easier time getting information than ever before, it has shown a significant decrease in our attention spans. A recent study by Microsoft was able to culminate that our average attention span has dropped to a mere 8 seconds. This has forced news outlets to pack weeks of information from a trial into just a minute-long snippet for our consumption. Judge Jason Chambers speaks on how the nature of media can now misrepresent the information from these major cases.
There might be a 1 or 2 day trial or a 2 week trial, and either written, televised, or radio media has to condense it down in. And I'm not faulting the media for doing it that way. That's the nature of it. You know, if you have 30 seconds for a story and you got to summarize something, that doesn't give the whole picture, but that's the face that goes out there sometimes.
Well, the media and public can point fingers about who is responsible for this decrease in attention span. Ultimately, the relationship between the two is symbiotic. If one is to fully understand what is going on in a case, examining multiple lengthy sources and using personal intuition seems to be the way to go to gain all of the facts. For Bird's Eye View, I'm Blake Borgart.
It's really fascinating to hear about how much is behind these court cases that may get lost or hard to explain for the common person. Like I said, I had difficulty understanding the jargon in the statutes, let alone understanding it and then explaining it.
It was weird to hear the state's attorney say that two sentences will never be the same. Coming from my previous knowledge, it seems like sentencing would be something more of a blanket or systematic factor in a case. But as Mr. Knapp mentioned, social media really makes things seem black and white. And I think that's something we have to take into account as members of the public.
And moving over to social media, it is a way that the American social justice cases are looked at in a closer way. Matt Cherry from the news team spoke with Professor Nate Carpenter on how cases travel through social media and the impact it has.
Justice is one of the major issues taken seriously here on the campus of Illinois State University. Crime is a matter that evolves with the time, so it only made sense to look into the effects that social media poses on the justice system. With most of the American population using social media to upload pictures, videos, and status updates, it's only logical to wonder how this online information has made its way into investigations or as evidence in court hearings. According to ISU professor Dr. Nathan Carpenter, social media can play a vital role in the incrimination of a person.
Social media, they provide this whole new space of content creation that definitely can incriminate people. Think about the January 6th insurrection, right? You've got all sorts of people who are there actively participating, taking screenshots, saying, let's find members of Congress and hang them. I mean, they're literally shouting this into their phones, live streaming all of that, and after the fact, deleting it, being told by their legal counsel that they better make their accounts private.
Social media has proven to be not as anonymous as some had hoped it would. Yet, while the rise of social media has primarily impacted the incrimination of suspects in investigations, Dr. Carpenter also says that these online platforms can impact the stigmatization and profiling of certain groups of people.
So, I mean, it happens all the time. Think about current and existing profiling and how that already exists, like policing of certain communities for curfew or drugs or noise or whatever, right? And now amplify that. You know, social media provide all these other spaces to be profiled.
One of the biggest implications with social media is that these effects may unintentionally result in either a good or bad outcome, and it's not always clear which one it'll be. Social media has given police a platform to share important information with the public that can be trusted. However, according to Officer Brad Park of the Normal Police Department, these same platforms also have had the capacity to directly impact the spread of misinformation.
What we push out is what we want the public to know, but we also understand with being able to share information through Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, and being able to comment on the certain posts that we put out, we understand a lot of times things get taken out of context once people start commenting and putting in information that may not be reliable about the case.
It's also important to note that police are not immune to making online mistakes when dealing with the distribution of information. Officer Park expands on the expectations that a police officer must meet when using their online interfaces.
When you're an officer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and our social media policy that officers have to adhere to, if they do any posts online, it needs to be non-political, it needs to be non-judgmental, and our officers try to do that. Let's say, for example, they have to go and testify on a certain case, and a public defender locates a social media page that they had posted on, and could that be used in court? It very well could be. That's up to the judge and what they allow in.
While social media has had both positive and negative consequences in the justice system, one thing is for sure. Social media is a part of our lives and will continue to impact investigations moving forward. Something we can do is educate ourselves on what effects social media can have on our lives and consciously try to use our platform safely. For Bird's Eye View, I'm Matt Cherry.
I thought it was just so fascinating how social media is often used in investigations. Social media just seems so informal to me. So seeing someone's Instagram post being used in the court of law is just so strange.
Something else that stood out to me in this piece is how police officers have a social media policy and how attorneys look through different social media pages to try and find anything that can damage the other side's case. It makes sense, but it's strange that people involved in the criminal justice system have to be so careful online.
And I think it's obvious to note that this new aspect that directly impacts the justice system in a way that we have not considered back in the 2000s, to think that anything we post can be used as evidence against us if we are taken to court, or it can alter how people learn about high-profile cases across the country. It's interesting to see the power it has now, and perhaps to think ahead to the power it may hold in the future. But for now, we'll be right back with insights into the effectiveness of incarcerations after this short break. You're listening to The Bird's Eye View on 103.3 WZND.
The Bird's Eye View continues now, only on 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Bird's Eye View on 103.3 WZND. If you are just tuning in, we have so far discussed the process of social justice, sentencing convicts, as well as the effects of social media on some of these higher profile cases.
Incarceration is one of the main aspects of the American justice system. But in this system, many criticize how it actually serves a community and question its true purpose.
Incarceration has many effects on a person after they have had long sentences. We'll take a deeper look at how incarceration has negatives and positives to the justice system. Our very own producer, Gavin Broderick, took a deeper look.
Imprisonment, also known as incarceration, has been the most common punishment by different states for centuries. Incarceration is incredibly popular, especially here in the United States. Dr. Jesse Kreinert is a criminal justice professor at Illinois State. She shared her insight into why we use incarceration so often.
Currently, our incarceration rate is at its lowest point since 1996, but we still have higher incarceration rates than any other country. And so we have a lot of different philosophies of incarceration, from punishment to rehabilitation to control, but most would agree that currently we use prisons mainly for incapacitation. We want to take people out of society.
While it's true that incarcerations are very widespread and a common punishment, the effectiveness of imprisonment is questionable. Dr. Kreinart shared her view on the successfulness of incarcerations.
Theoretically, incarceration could deter people from crime or rehabilitate people through programming and training, but we just don't have evidence to suggest that this is a widespread trend. It's just really, really difficult to find a lot of positive aspects of incarceration.
Not only imprisonment, but crime is an issue that politicians run on. Dr. Kreinart shares her observations on the politicization of incarcerations and the effects it has.
I think it's just because we don't really know what else to do necessarily. And so when we think about, what we've historically done, we like the idea of getting tough on crime, and incarceration seems to kind of meet that need. It's very difficult when we talk about reducing our prison population. No politician wants to have a platform where they're seen as being soft on crime.
Being in prison is one thing, but getting out is another story on its own. The permanent record that stays with an individual once they've served their sentence does not fade. Marlon Chamberlain is the campaign manager of Fully Free. The campaign looks to end long-term consequences for ex-convicts. Being an ex-convict himself, he shared his insight into some of the long-term effects it's had on his life.
And an example, my father passed away last year in March. I'm next of kin, but because I have a 25-year-old felony conviction on my record, I was unable to act as his executor, even though he appointed me the executor. I was unable to fulfill that role because of my conviction.
Being incarcerated is meant not only to be a punishment, but a way to rehabilitate convicts and prepare them to re-enter society. Chamberlain explains his view on the purpose of incarcerations.
95% of the individuals who are sent to that are incarcerated will return home. And so you would think that prison was or should be a space to where people could get the help that they need to truly rehabilitate themselves. But prison, to me, is just another way of capitalism and for companies to make money, and the focus is not rehabilitation.
For WZND and Bird's Eye View, I'm Gavin Broderick. Something I wasn't quite able to fit into my piece was something Marlon Chamberlain said. He was telling me that while he was rehabilitated in prison, it wasn't the prison system that did it. He said that he almost had to rehabilitate himself to become a functioning member of society.
I think that is a major aspect that maybe we didn't touch on the show today. The idea that people who are incarcerated have to make the conscious choice to have growth and to seek to return to society in some quote-unquote normal functioning aspect.
I agree. We do not hear much about the process of life for those who went to jail or prison. Braden Fogerson from the news team also talked to Marlon Chamberlain to get the point of view of how the justice system can really affect a person on a personal level.
The history of the American justice system entails plenty of moments that have made people question the level of justice that truly is possible in this country. Heartland Alliance campaign manager Marlon Chamberlain has seen firsthand just how punishment is not always consistent or reliable, especially in the state of Illinois. He talks about the motives present within our justice system, as well as finding out how these motives are taken over as the goal of the justice system, instead of actually finding justice.
As the current system exists, I do not believe that the goal of this system is justice. It's about capital. It's about money. It's about making people wealthy. So I would not say that the current system moves with justice in mind. To me, it moves with capitalism in mind.
Another important aspect about history is that we must be able to learn from it. Chamberlain says that we must be able to understand why the changes that have already been made to improve the justice system were made. He also adds that the limits still present have a reason, and we must be able to interpret why they are there, as well as who they benefit.
I think the more exposure, the more people learn about the system, the more educated people become about the system and how it operates, and you see more of these more intentional driven campaigns to address the system have really helped the improvement in the last 4 decades.
Chamberlain himself served over a decade in federal prison before becoming an advocate for social justice among those who have already been incarcerated. Chamberlain says that his time in prison helped him find a way to turn his life around, but is hesitant to say that the process the justice system put him through is the reason that he did so.
I think about myself, someone who went into the legal system at an early age and then was able to self-correct myself and use that experience as a sort of like a awakening to say that I wanted to live a different lifestyle. But I don't know if it was the system that did that.
There's still some hope for improvement for the justice system in Chamberlain's eyes. He says that there's still a way to improve public safety without increasing incarcerations. If people were more inclined to try to find the right ways to get people the help that they need, we could lessen the amount of people resorting to crime.
We care more about servicing people and getting people the right help that they need while also holding folks accountable. The country is really looking for this reimagining of what public safety means and how it looks, and making sure that across the board, everybody's interaction with the system is the same.
He highlights the importance of looking out for one another and fighting for an equality of opportunity in this country. Additionally, Chamberlain believes that if we were to make the improvements to the justice system necessary to make that happen, our country would be much safer than we would had we just decided to lock these people up. For WZND and Bird's Eye View, I'm Braden Fogerson.
One thing I loved about this piece was being able to speak to someone who has been in the system and understands what they see. We often hear what the system should be, but now we can hear how it directly impacted and heavily affected Mr. Chamberlain's life.
I think something we often miss when we talk about these institutions is the human element. We often get bogged down in statistics and forget about the individuals that are affected.
One thing that stuck out to me was Mr. Chamberlain explaining that he feels that he was the one who pushed himself to get better when it came to bettering himself.
And with that, we've reached the end of today's Bird's Eye View. Throughout today's show, we discussed social justice advocates for changing the American criminal justice system, as well as sentencing, rehabilitation, social media's impact on cases, as well as the effects of incarcerations. If you missed any part of today's show, you can head over to WZND.com to listen to the full show right after this. Be sure to tune in next month for your in-depth coverage on all the issues that matter in the Bloomington-Normal community. Right here on the Bird's Eye View, this is 103.3 WZND.
That's it for this month's edition of the Bird's Eye View. To hear this and other past episodes of the show, find the Bird's Eye View podcast on WZND.com or in the iTunes podcast store. And as always, for up-to-the-minute award-winning local news, sports, and weather, stay tuned to 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.